Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D.L. White. Chapter 12. Two Meetings. After making the decision to stay at Twitchell's, Nick found he stopped fixating about all of the issues and problems he'd found during his first 2 days. Sure, he still had to wear the gown and the tie and do more lessons and prep than he'd ever imagined were possible. But now, each evening, he had as much internet access as he wanted. One issue still needed resolving. His granddad. Given time, he was certain that he'd find a way to get some visits in. While his time at Twitchell's was now less stressful, one part of his daily routine was painful. The part that involved commuting via magic portal. Twice a day, morning and night, he found himself uncontrollably floating between Brighton and Twitchell's. Even when the portal was close enough to the ground that you could almost jump through it, Nick still had to endure the feeling of gravity leaving him and then returning. Despite Jenny saying he would get used to it, it was nauseating. The mornings were the worst. James was far better at conjuring the portal that took them to the bottom of Elf's Garden than he was at the return journey. To get back to Twitchell's, they used a portal in the woods, out of sight of any students and teachers. And sometimes that portal would be 50 feet in the air among the canopy of the trees, and they would have to navigate past branches and tree trunks on the way down. Once they landed, Cece, back in the dull grey fur she wore as a dog disguise, would scamper off to fetch their ID badges for them, and they would emerge from the woods ready to start the day. Still, even with the uncomfortable commute, Nick was feeling good about his new school. At least he was, up until Friday. On Friday morning, after a particularly difficult descent through the woods, Nick had his first games lesson. Games was the same as PE at his old school, just with a different name, and with decent equipment that had been purchased within the last decade. James showed Nick which clothes counted as the right kit. Black tracksuit bottoms, dark grey polo shirt, trainers or rugby boots, long black socks, and told him to avoid rugby at all costs. Collier plays rugby, James had said, and he doesn't take prisoners. I heard he broke a boy's arm in year 8, or so the rumour goes. We weren't here back then to witness it. Armed with that knowledge, Nick chose table tennis and quite enjoyed it, especially because there was no prep involved. Friday was also the day for Nick's meeting with the inspector. The man did not seem to spend much time in the school, but came and went as he pleased. And lunchtime was when he chose to check in on Nick's progress. Elf and Cece found Nick just as he was tucking in to a second portion of Toad in the Hole.
"The inspector is here today," Elf said softly. "He just had a meeting with James."
"Is that a bad thing?" Nick asked. A forkful of gravy-soaked batter wavered in his hand, paused halfway to his mouth.
"Probably not," Elf said. "But you can never tell with the inspector. He plays his own game. I just wanted to say that it's better not to say that your decision to stay here at Twitchell's has anything to do with us."
She paused and scooped Cece up.
"The less the inspector knows, the better for all of us."
Nick had finished the forkful and started to load up the next one. "I thought about what to tell him, and I think he'll just be pleased if I say I'm staying."
"Be careful with him. He knows a lot more than he ever lets on."
The girl and monkey left, and Nick finished off his lunch with 2 helpings of apple crumble. On the way out of the hall, the maitre d' waved him over.
"You've got an appointment with the inspector," she said, "in the library."
"Right now?"
"I wouldn't be telling you now if it was next week, would I?" she said sharply.
Nick didn't think she wanted a reply, so walked briskly out of the hall. After 3 nights sleeping in Elf's spare bedroom, Nick still did not know exactly what the others were working on in Brighton. but it was clear to him that they didn't go back there every night simply because they didn't like Twitchell's. Almost all of his time at her house was spent on his computer, and while he didn't pay much attention to what was going on around him, he couldn't help but notice that Elf did a lot of sewing, James practiced conjuring portals, and Jenny worked out on the gym equipment. A lot. One thing was clear to him, though. The inspector wanted or needed something from them. When Nick had told them they were being electronically tracked, they were truly surprised. But they were not at all surprised that the inspector would want to track their movements outside Twitchell's. For now, Nick didn't mind being out of the loop. He figured that eventually he'd find out what was going on. The library door opened on first try. Even though sunlight was pouring in through the high windows, the antique shelves, packed with thousands of blood-coloured leather-bound books, consumed most of the brightness. The inspector was in the shadows at the far end, sitting in the dim glow of a study lamp. There was something on the desk in front of him, lit by the lamp, and Nick was halfway across the floor before he recognised it was a chessboard. He sat down opposite the inspector. Most of the white pieces were off the board, and the few that were left were in disarray. The inspector stared at the board, holding the white queen in his fingers. The game had ended, the white king toppled, its head hanging off the side of the board. Black's pieces were in much better shape, many of them surrounding the fallen king. "Do you play?" the inspector asked, without looking up. "Not really. I mean, I know how the pieces move, but every time I've played online, I seem to get beaten in seconds." Tricks. Easily learned, and almost as easily countered. "Am I to understand that you still want to leave Twitchell's and go home tomorrow?" The man hadn't looked up. His eyes were locked on a single white piece that had made its way through Black's defences. A light square bishop pinning a pawn against the black king. "Well, actually, I think I'd like to stay on, at least for a while, if that's okay, I mean." With a flick of a finger, the queen in the inspector's hand somersaulted into the air, and in one fluid motion he caught it and swung it down onto the board right in front of Nick. It made a satisfying clack as it landed in the middle of a white square. "That's great news," he said, shuffling the pieces back into their proper positions. "But do you think you'll be able to cope with the Wi-Fi rule?" "Just about. An hour a day is pretty bad, but I'm adapting." Nick moved a rook back into a corner. "And are you adapting to the lessons?" "I'm behind, but catching up." This was not a lie. Nick had learned more this week than in a whole term of his old school. "And while I know it's still your first week and these things take time, have you made any friends?" The inspector placed the final piece, the light square bishop, into place next to the white king. "A couple, maybe. I'm not great at things like that." The inspector seemed satisfied with the response. "Then let me teach you a trick, a checkmate trap. Not that I would expect you to use it on a new friend, or anyone else for that matter. But knowing the trap means that you can watch out for it in future, and counter it." He swiveled the board around so that the black pieces were now in front of Nick. "I'm going to start with a move called D4, which in itself is not a trick." He moved the pawn in front of the white king 2 squares forwards. "Now, what is your response?" Nick had no idea what to do. He looked at a few pieces, then just mirrored the inspector's move, pushing his king pawn 2 spaces forward until it was right in front of the white pawn. The inspector made a couple more moves without saying anything. Nick continued to copy them and was just about to move his bishop when he realized that the inspector's last move left one of the white bishops completely unprotected. His queen could simply take it. Nick checked that his queen couldn't be taken by another white piece afterwards. Satisfied that it would be safe, he made the move and removed the white bishop from the board. "Ah," the inspector said. "I presume you made sure I couldn't take your queen." "Yes," Nick said. "It's safe." "That much is true. But your king is not. He moved his other bishop into play and put Nick's king in check. And no matter how you block that bishop, my queen will be coming for your king, while yours watches on from afar. It looked like Nick's white pieces should have been able to defend against the attack, but nothing he thought of would work. It was checkmate's next move. Let's set up and go again, the inspector said. And this time, if you see something that's too good to be true, assume it's a trap. They played two more games, and the inspector talked through each move as they went, pointing out checks, forks, skewers, all things that he said that Nick should get used to looking out for before making each move. 15 minutes later, chess lesson was over, and Nick was back in the corridors of the college, heading for his next lesson, art. He'd lost both games, and while he had no real interest in chess, he was pleased not to have to answer any awkward questions about portals or magic or whatever else happened in Elf's house. Art lessons were all in the studio. Nick checked his map and found that the studio was not attached to the main building, but it was in its own space beyond the accommodation blocks. He hurried out of the college and across the lawn, round C block on the gravel path, across a courtyard where there was an ornate pond with a fountain in the middle which he'd never seen. And on the other side of the pond was Collier. Nick stopped and looked for another way round. The man-boy put his phone away.
"You've been avoiding me."
Nick said nothing. Then he turned to retrace his steps and slammed straight into the other boy he'd seen with Collier in the dark, Hector. He was a solid mass of thick bones and muscle. He shoved Nick hard, and he almost lost his balance on the flagstones at the edge of the water.
"Watch where you're going,"
he said in his blocked nose voice while moving to Nick's right. Collier strode around the pond to his left. Nick thought about running, but he'd never get past Hector.
"You're late to class," Collier said. "That's not good. You poor scholarships need to do better. But lucky for you, we're here to help. What lesson have you got?"
The look on Collier's face was not one of support and kindness. Nick said nothing. Collier sighed.
"The silent treatment. Well, lucky for you, I know exactly what lesson you have next."
He smiled in a way that let Nick know that something bad was going to happen. And before he could react, both of the bigger boys grabbed his shoulders and lifted him off the ground with ease. They held him just above the flagstones like they were moving a bookcase.
"You've got a swimming lesson," Collier said, and the boys heaved him into the air towards the pond.
"I can't swim,"
Nick blurted. But he was already horizontal above the water when the last of his words came out. Then, with a mighty splash, he slammed into the cold surface. The shock took his breath away, and he began to panic, flailing his arms and thrashing at the water. He gulped down half a lungful of pond water before his hands and feet registered the slimy weeds at the bottom of the pond. It was only 2 feet deep. He lifted his head out and vomited the filthy water before gasping for air. He could hear the two boys roaring with laughter and tried to stand up, but slipped on the weeds and sat back down, producing another roar of laughter. He gave up trying to stand up and just crawled to the edge of the pond and dragged himself out.
"I'm pleased to say that you passed the first lesson," Collier said. "Next time you should try butterfly. Would love to talk more, but we've got to get to art."
Nick rolled onto his back. An awkward lump pushed up into him. His bag was trapped underneath. He ignored it, then remembered his laptop was in his bag. Frantically forcing himself back up into a kneeling position, he hauled the filthy, soaked gown over his head, slapping it down onto the flagstones next to him. He swung his bag around onto his front, and as he opened it, he started coughing, pond water streaming from his nose. It tasted as bad as it smelt. Worse even. The only thing that made him feel better was that the inside of his bag wasn't too wet, and his laptop just had a few smears of water on it, mostly from his hands as he pulled it out. There was a bench nearby, presumably for people to sit and enjoy the water. Nick put his laptop on one end of the bench while he gathered up his gown and squeezed it out over the pond. A filthy waterfall streamed back into the murky waters. It was only then that he realized how cold he was. He was shivering, soaked from head to foot on a grey September afternoon. He did not think the day could get any worse. But before he could work out what to do next, he heard someone approaching and turned to see the caretaker striding toward him. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.